Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast series. I'm your host, Teresa Link, and in this series, we'll hear from people on their Virta journey, the wins, failures, moments of adversity, and moments of joy they're experiencing along the way. So sit back, relax, and listen as we unwrap the truly human experience of Virta. Welcome back to Your Life Reset. Today's topic is all about fasting. What are the different types of fasts? Should you try it? Should you not? To help untangle these questions, I'll be interviewing Dietrich Snyder, a registered dietitian and health coach at Virta for nearly 3 years. Dietrich has a wealth of expertise, and I'm excited to dig into this topic with him. Thanks for joining us today, Dietrich.
Thank you, Teresa. It's my pleasure. I'll be really excited to dive into these topics and deliver the most important takeaways that I think people should consider when they're thinking about fasting.
That's why I wanted you here. In the introduction, I mentioned you've been a health coach for almost 3 years. So a lot's changed. A lot's changed in the world of health coaching at Virta during that time. How are things going now? What's the most exciting part about being in the coaching world today?
Yeah, I think it is definitely changing and for the better. And I'm super excited about how the team is growing, you know, how we're tackling challenges that are unique to scaling and treating, you know, the number of people that we have under our management in our program. And it's just constantly exciting. It's never a dull day, and we're always on our toes trying to optimize our platform and our clinical protocols and just make sure, you know, we're really providing the best possible treatment program that you could ask for.
That's great. I love that you're excited by that you're excited by solving new problems, tackling new problems so that we can help as many people as possible, right? Because it's very different when you are at scale, when you are working with tens of thousands of members versus hundreds. And, you know, in the future, it will be hundreds of thousands, hopefully millions, right? So it is a very different world. I'm excited that you're excited. So why don't we dive into our topic today, which is fasting. So first off, can you define what fasting is? And then also, can you explain the difference between extended fasting, intermittent fasting, and time-restricted eating?
Yeah, absolutely. Great place to start, because there are so many definitions out there and there's a lot of discrepancies. So intermittent fasting, as it's used today, I find is used to describe just any eating pattern that involves restricting food or restricting calories for a period of time. Now, technically, in the scientific literature, we see time-restricted feeding as the more common term used for these practices. And, you know, I won't get into the semantics about what we're using in popular culture versus scientific literature. The fact of the matter is people are using the term intermittent fasting. And so I think that's what we'll use here.
So you're saying that they're essentially the same? Intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding are basically the same thing?
Essentially, yeah. They're kind of both umbrella terms, and the big main difference between those two is time-restricted feeding refers to that eating window in which you're eating, whereas intermittent fasting refers to the fasting period, the time where you're not eating. So it can get a little bit confusing when we're trying to figure out what we're referring to. But, you know, when I, in my practice, how I see it most is people use intermittent fasting to refer to like a abbreviated eating window. So let's say you're eating from noon to 8 p.m., or maybe you're eating 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. or something like that. There's plenty of other forms of time-restricted feeding or intermittent fasting. There's the one meal a day approach. There's the 5-2 pattern, where 5 days of the week is just normal eating, and then 2 days of the week you're, you know, having like a severe low calorie day or something like that. There's every other day eating and other approaches that just completely eliminate food intake for an entire day. Those are the more kind of extreme versions. But generally speaking, and I think in our conversation, when we use intermittent fasting, we're mostly referring to a shortened eating window in your day.
Got it. Thank you so much for kind of boiling that down. I think we often hear from our members that they're confused about those differences. So it's really helpful to hear that explained so eloquently and in such a simplified way. So extended fasting, you know, my understanding would be kind of the same thing. It's just it's longer, right? You're fasting for a longer period of time. Is there a definition for the minimum amount of time to fast when it's considered extended fasting?
You will see different definitions in the research, but I think generally 24 hours of not eating and anything longer than that is what's what like an extended fast might refer to.
Got it. I've heard that as well. You know, not only are there different windows of eating in intermittent fasting, there are different definitions for what is considered extended fasting. There's just a whole lot of nuance, it seems like, in this topic.
Well, what I'm hoping to communicate through this, through our podcast here, is that there are many methods, but the concepts and the principles are few. And so if you're able to find an approach that works well for you, and it actually works well for you, we're going to get into some of the pros and cons and who should, who shouldn't try, you know, something like an intermittent fasting approach. I think once we can kind of clear out some of the nuances and align things, it really can be simplified, and it doesn't have to be too complicated.
That's great. We don't like complicated. Let's say for the purposes of today, we focus most of our time on intermittent fasting. So not fasting for longer than, you know, 24 hours. How does intermittent fasting affect the body at a physiological level?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think intermittent fasting is doing anything magical. If you restrict the window in which you're eating food, you're necessarily eating less calories. And that, I think, provides the bulk of the benefit that people see. It's really just another rule of thumb that you can use to help with weight loss and help with metabolic improvement and things like that. You know, when it comes down to it, though, we have circadian biology. Essentially, our hormones will naturally fluctuate throughout each day in a predictable fashion. And if we're eating for, let's say, greater than 12 hours in a day, you know, you're eating breakfast at 7, and then let's say you're eating, you know, your post-dinner dessert at, who knows, 10 p.m., that's a pretty extended period in which you are eating. And that doesn't really align well with the natural cycles of hormones that you have in a typical day. So I often argue that, you know, if you're eating for more than 12 hours a day, then, you know, let's start there. If,
sure.
If we can get down to, say, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., then that's just like a normal, healthy eating pattern. It'd be hard to even consider that intermittent fasting. But, you know, the fact is, we all have to fast. We sleep overnight and we're not taking in calories, and our bodies have to adapt their metabolism in order to continue providing energy to fuel your natural physiological processes, like your organs functioning and things like that. So if that process occurs or is supposed to occur in a fasted state, then if we're just eating throughout the day, we're preventing ourselves from getting some of those benefits.
So kind of putting a few pieces together here in my brain, correct me if I'm wrong. If I were to consume the exact same food, the exact same nutrients, calories, one day, and I was eating every single hour of the day, let's say 24 hours, the next day, I consumed the exact same foods, calories, but I was giving myself breaks, right? Maybe I had 3 meals per day rather than just eating on a consistent basis. You know, what I'm hearing is that there is a benefit to having that kind of that break, that fast in between. Is that accurate to say?
I would argue so. Yeah. I mean, when I started this, I mentioned, you know, 80% of the benefit, or maybe 90% of the benefit, just has to do with, you know, finding a way that's helpful to reduce your food intake. But when we look at like the margins here, and you consider these cases where if we have the exact same calorie and macronutrient meals in a time-restricted eating fashion versus an unlimited eating fashion, we do see that those periods of fasting, even through the day from like breakfast to lunch, it's giving you, essentially it's a metabolic reset. It gives your body, it gives your liver, it gives your pancreas this time it needs to rest and recover from the, you know, the damage that eating excessively can do. By pausing that intake of food, you're giving your body's metabolism time to reset and heal itself.
Interesting. That makes a lot of sense. So we've talked about the fact that there are some benefits to various forms of intermittent fasting. Are there any risks that our listeners need to be aware of?
Oh, absolutely. And I definitely think it's important to really have those clear and top of mind. There are certainly some groups of people who should maybe avoid intermittent fasting, or if they choose to pursue it, with the utmost of carefulness. So the main risk of intermittent fasting that I see is associated with the more extreme versions, like one meal a day eating, or if you're going an entire 24-hour period with no intake. The biggest issue you run into there is accelerated loss of muscle. And we know how important muscle is for your metabolism, for your overall health, for your well-being. And if there's one takeaway, it's that those extreme forms of fasting can waste your muscles away. And it, the older you get, the harder it is to recover that. And it just turns into a terrible cycle to be in. Some other people who are not good candidates for intermittent fasting because of the medical risks associated with it. So for people with diabetes, who are taking medications that will lower glucose rapidly, like your insulin, your sulfonylureas, like glipizide, glimepiride, things like that, those people should definitely not start an intermittent fasting protocol, because the intermittent fasting may lower their blood glucose. And then if they take that same dose of that medication that's also going to lower their blood glucose, they're going to end up in a dangerous situation, critically hypoglycemic. And, you know, that can land you in the hospital. So definitely be communicating with your care team about the possibility of whether, you know, you're even a good candidate for something like that. The last kind of main risk that I see with some people is an increase in stress hormones. And this one's really kind of nebulous. It's difficult to track down. But if you're, you know, I use this stress bucket analogy. If you've got, you know, stressful work, stressful home life, and then you're adding on the stress of not eating, then this could fill your stress bucket up to the point it's overflowing. And then that damage can cascade into other negative health consequences. If you're adopting a fasting approach that is pushing your stress beyond your body's ability to manage it, then you end up running into these kinds of negative health effects.
Anyone that wants to initiate a fasting routine is trying to heal the body and not damage the body. So it's helpful to know there are extremes you can go to that can be quite risky. Not even just extremes, but certain individuals that it's just not a good idea for, or maybe it's not the right time in their life for too. So it does sound like there are lots of nuances to explore. And the most important thing from a safety standpoint that I'm really hearing from you today is to make sure your care team is aware of what you want to explore, rather than just diving in on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's tempting, right? But it's important to make sure that your medications check out, your physiology checks out, everything else, you know, checks out for it to be a sustainable approach.
All right, Dietrich. So you've laid out a lot of risks and benefits of intermittent fasting, fasting in general, right? I do think it might be beneficial for our listeners to hear about some success stories. Can you share any personal stories or perhaps testimonials that you've heard about folks that have had success with intermittent fasting?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and to reiterate, Virta is primarily focusing on macronutrients, right? And that leads to the weight loss, improvements in insulin sensitivity and things like that. So an intermittent fasting approach is not antagonistic. It can be completely complementary to the Virta approach. And so one example of this is I have a male member. He's signed up with Virta for obesity. He saw really fantastic weight loss results in the first year and a half. He lost about 80 pounds and he had kind of reached a plateau and was in maintenance mode. I noticed in his chart that he started losing weight again. And so I checked in. I was like, hey, what's been working well for you? And it turns out that he had started a somewhat moderate intermittent fasting regimen. I think he was focusing on two meals a day, about a 6-hour eating window. And he sticks with it to this day and is really enjoying it. And so, you know, as long as you're seeing the benefits and you're feeling the benefits, and as long as you're, you know, staying on top of your protein intake and your vitamins and minerals from your non-starchy veggies, you know, it can be a suitable approach that fits into the Virta approach pretty well.
Excellent. It's really helpful to outline that you can have a form of intermittent fasting that still feels very reasonable. So you shared a success story from one of your members. Have you heard any stories where perhaps fasting was not a good approach for a certain individual?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not a one-off case. You know, I see this pretty regularly. And so I think it's really important for people to understand that it's about moderation and it's about finding the right approach for you. So this example comes from a woman who had signed up for Virta. She had already been on her journey. She had already done a lot of really positive things for her health. She still had diabetes and elevated glucose and wanted to lose weight. So she signed up for Virta. She started sticking with the well-formulated ketogenic diet. She was feeling the benefits, seeing the benefits. She lost significant weight. And then she also had gained optimal glucose control. Her glucose was right in the perfect range. And she felt like she had more to lose and more to improve. So she wanted to jumpstart further weight loss with an intermittent fasting regimen. And she went all in with a one meal a day approach. So she was just eating dinner. She was also a regular exerciser. She was a nurse, so she's on her feet all the day. And over the next 2 weeks, I saw her fasting glucose rise steadily day after day. What was great glucose control with just eating for 12 hours a day and sticking with a ketogenic diet, keeping up with her physical activity, that glucose control went out of control once she started the one meal a day approach. And what was going on here is that, you know, it was pushing her stress hormones up. And, you know, stress hormones like cortisol are known to release glucose into the bloodstream, especially overnight. And so I checked in with her. We had a call and we kind of described what may be the best approach moving forward. And I encouraged her to ease it down to a 6 to 8 hour eating window. And as soon as she started eating a couple meals a day, rather than just that one meal a day, the fasting glucose started coming back down in range. And she, you know, continued to lose the weight that she wanted to lose. And so it's just really important to pay attention to all of the factors that are going on. There's hormones that are being affected by fasting practices, you know, your glucose and your insulin sensitivity, all of these are being affected and not all of that is quite obvious.
Wow, that's a great example. It's really both an example of perhaps a situation where intermittent fasting backfired a bit, mm-hmm. but then it turned into a success story when she was able to figure out how to make that a bit more moderate and then start to see those results. All right, Dietrich, it's time for us to wrap things up for today. So I think it would be really helpful for our listeners to hear your top 2 to 3 takeaways to summarize today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. My first key takeaway, if you're choosing to participate in an intermittent fasting approach, make sure you're focusing on getting adequate protein, hitting that target, and then make sure you're prioritizing colorful, non-starchy veggies within your eating window. The next one, we hinted on it previously, just avoid an excessively restrictive intermittent fasting approach. If you're fasting for greater than 24 hours, you're losing muscle, and that ultimately puts your metabolism at risk. The last one here is that if you choose to add an intermittent fasting regimen, start with something that's moderate, something that you can maintain daily indefinitely. I love this quote, consistency beats intensity.
Very wise words to close us with, Dietrich. Thank you again so much for providing your expertise today on different types of fasting and kind of unpacking this, what we may have thought to be a complex topic, which turns out is not quite as complex as perhaps we thought.
Well, it's a pleasure talking. I hope this is really helpful for our members. And yeah, I'll be looking forward to future conversations.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe. And even better, leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at vertahealth.com/join. Your life reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.